Nie jesteś wolny.
Tak wiecie, ale to tam.
Czyli
może was potencjalnie.
earth living to keep. This confounded charge as you pull out of it. Kamsi Bhosi Krishna Chaitanya Bhavanityana Sri Advaita Gadadha Siddha Saribhova Bhakti. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Bhagavina Sramatanda Radha Kundi Giri Bhavadam. Sri Vrindavanta Navati Padam Ki Deva Ganga Mayi Ki Deva Guna Mayi Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Tulsi Devi Ki Samaveda Bhakti. All glorious is Samadhi. All glorious is Samadhi. All glorious is Samadhi. All glorious is Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Itai Gaur Pimanandi. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samadhi Thilamani. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Guru Vani Pujarani Namaste Sarasvati Devi Guru Vani Pujarani. Om Ganakimilandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Saksu Samilatam Jana Saksmai Sri Guru Venama Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jana Bhutale Sayam Vipakadamaya Padati Sapi. So happy to see you. Have you been to Hong Kong or China recently?
No, since I've seen you, I haven't been anymore to Asia. It was in September.
Yes.
But I did follow up on our conversation.
Yes.
I got in touch with Bhano Swami.
Yes.
I got Vishwanath Chakravarti Kuru's commentary.
Yes.
And I'm writing, I got it, that the letter was there. So we discussed that in Hong Kong.
Yes.
And you still speak with Bhano Swami.
Yes, yes.
So.
And you're well?
Yeah, yes. Fine.
Excuse me. Hare Krishna. We've been speaking on Krishna's visit to Mathura, and well, I tried my best. Let's see. Oh yes. How's this? Oh, indeed. Rawr. We usually save that one for Lord Shringadev's appearance day. Rawr. Did you get afraid? Little. We used to never think our performance was a success unless at least a few of the children cried. But this is a different kind of a pastime. Krishna goes to Mathura and he has a specific mission. And that mission is to kill Kamsa. Now Kamsa, on one level, is Krishna's uncle. But actually, Kamsa is an asura. He's actually a demon. And there are so many examples of why Kamsa is a demon. But one of the simplest to understand, and in one sense the most confronting, is that when Kamsa was driving the chariot of his newly married sister, whose name was Devaki, and her husband, whose name was Vasudeva, suddenly there was a voice in the sky that declared that the eighth child, Kamsa, you are such a fool. You are driving the chariot. You are acting as the servant of your sister and your brother-in-law. But you don't know that the eighth garbha, the eighth child in the who will come to the womb of them, will be your death. He will kill you, or you will be killed by that eighth child. So immediately, without a second thought, when it came to saving his own life, Kamsa's own life, he pulled out his sword and he was going to kill Devaki. Immediately, no consideration of what was right or what was wrong, whether the voice, the Akashvani, the unembodied voice in the sky, was correct or incorrect. No, just kill him. His own sister. And with this killing of his sister, or killing of anyone, stop the death of Kamsa or anyone else? No, because everyone in this world is doomed. Sometimes there was a few years ago, I don't remember how many anymore, but there was a great tsunami, there was an earthquake somewhere in the middle of the ocean near Indonesia, and a great wave came up. And in that few minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I think there were 100,000 people killed. So such a terrible devastation. And many religious people at that time thought, how is it possible that such a terrible, terrible thing can happen with God present in this world? So therefore, those religious people became atheists. No. God cannot be all-powerful. And there's no meaning to God if he's not all-powerful. They became atheists. But the reality is, not only 100,000 people will be killed, everyone will be killed. There are no survivors in this world. So deal with that this world is actually a terrible place, a dangerous place. We come and we act for some time, we do so many things, we work hard, we accomplish, we enjoy, but everyone is destroyed. No survivors. But the only answer to the question, or the challenge, that how could God allow this to happen? The only answer to that is, oh no, he's all good and everything like that. And therefore, by my judgment, this should not have happened. But there is there are transcendental dimensions of this question. But one really has to confront this, that everyone is mortal. That means that everyone's time in this world is limited. And whether we're going to be picked up in the hands of a very loving and gentle Supreme Lord, or there is no one there, or there is no meaning to life, or one should gather as much wealth as one can and enjoy as much as one can in life, because there's nothing remaining, accumulate as much wealth and you might as well enjoy because you're going to die. This to decide how we're going to confront, deal with the situation of our death. And it's so staggering, if one thinks about it, that how many billions of people are alive, just people, are alive in the world right now? There's 7 billion, 8, somewhere between 7. It used to be 6.
7 billion.
I think in India they say that there's how many billions people in 1.3 or something.
1.2.
Yeah, but you can if you know India, they did a census, right, to decide how many people were there. So there's so many people everywhere, and you can imagine how many people are in this building. Oh, so many. Too many. So we wouldn't think. It's completely accurate. But there is 7 to 8 billion people perhaps in this world, and in 100, some of them are this big, some of them are like this, and some of them are like this, somewhat elderly now, and some of them are still more elderly. And in 100 years from now, just 100 years from now, how many of those people, from the smallest to the eldest, will still be in the same body, will still be alive? It is such a devastation. How are we going to deal with this very heavy point? And not only that, that in, say, 150 years from now, or say 200 years from now, which isn't a very long time, 200 years from now, how many people even know that you ever existed? That a person by the name of so-and-so, yes, very good example. That no one will even know that I ever existed. And here I am, thinking myself very, very significant. Well, in fact, the reality is everyone is insignificant. So how are we going to deal with this? What is the purpose of this life? How am I going to deal with the fact that, in fact, in 200 years or even less, no one will even know that this particular configuration of earth and water and fire and air ever walked upon this earth? So we should think very deeply about our life and what its significance is, and then we should act in quite a bold way to take advantage of the life that we have. And one of the bold things that we recommend we're doing is Navritta Tasar Bhagiyamanam Bhavosada. Osad means medicine. That the medicine to stop this cycle of repeated birth and death, the cycle of samsara, is just hearing about Krishna. Bhavosada Bharamat Ramanat. That it is pleasing to the mind too, abhiramat. It is pleasing to the mind to hear about Krishna. It is pleasing to the heart. It is medicine that actually isn't bitter. It is pleasing to the heart and the mind. And it also cures the disease of bhava, or repeated birth and death, by establishing in our consciousness, first the desire, then the taste, or maybe first even the hope that I have an eternal relationship with Krishna, then the desire to awaken that relationship, and the hope that it's actually possible because of Krishna's mercy, and then actually be living in our relationship with Krishna on so many different levels. This is possible, and to climb this ladder of our relationship with Krishna is purpose of our life. So let us hear something. Let's hear. We finished the 41st chapter yesterday, where Krishna had entered Mathura, and he had, with his coward boyfriends and Balaram, he had gone through the streets. And the ladies of Mathura, having heard about Krishna and his uniquely attractive beauty, had gone out, and they had looked at him. Some of them dressed themselves because they had heard about Krishna, because it's not a great distance between Mathura and Vrindavan. They heard about Krishna, and now they wanted to see him, so they rushed out because he was walking through the streets, and some of them got on the roofs of the houses and threw flower petals upon him. And Krishna captured each and every one of their hearts by his glances. He just looked at them and smiled at them very, very, very casually and very, very just but individually looked. And in that way, a relationship with Krishna was there. This is also described when the wives of the Brahmanas, this is earlier in the 10th canto, in the 23rd chapter of the 10th canto, the wives of the Brahmanas were devotees, and they went and saw Krishna. They had heard that Krishna was hungry. He wanted something to eat. So they went and saw Krishna carrying with them all the food that was meant for the sacrifice. And suddenly, they followed the coward boys to the exact place where Krishna was. And this place is known in Vrindavan. Does anyone know the name of the place? Or the village where they were, and then very close to that. Does anyone know the name? It's called Bhartral. Very close to the Yamuna River. And it's very close to where Akura, what is known as Akura Ghat, which there's more pastimes attached to that. There are three or four different pastimes attached to that Akura Ghat. But when those wives of the Brahmanas, they came out carrying all the food, they were carrying everything to Krishna. And when they saw Krishna just standing there, he was standing there, it describes in the Bhagavatam in that chapter, that he had, just like at Krishna Balaram Mandir, Balaram has his, who has his shoulder on who there? Krishna has his Balaram, okay. So Krishna was standing there like this, and in one hand, he was just so cool. He had a lotus flower, and he was twirling it. It was like this, and he was like, looked so beautiful, with wearing a beautiful turban and wearing his shamam, his dhoti that was effulgent like lightning. And those Brahmanis, the wives of the Brahman, looked at Krishna, and their eyes met, and Krishna entered right into their hearts through that glance. So the ladies of Mathura, they saw Krishna, and it was like a festival for their eyes. Nayana Utsava. It was a festival. A festival that was so exciting with its colorful decorations. So seeing Krishna was a festival for their eyes. And then they began to lament, because this is the nature of being with Krishna, is that one laments. In their case, they lamented that, we were so many years old or whatever, but we are not fortunate. They were seeing Krishna right there, but they were just thinking of the fortune of the ladies and the residents of Vrindavan, because every day they had seen Krishna. Every single day. Living in a village is like living in the same house as the person. So every day they would see Krishna. They would go out and milk the cows. Krishna would milk the cows. They would go to the well and carry water back and forth. And they would be talking about Krishna and seeing Krishna. So the ladies in Mathura were lamenting that, what is the use of our eyes? Because to this point we have not seen Krishna, but now we are seeing him. And on the other hand, the residents of Vrindavan, they were praying when Krishna was leaving. They were praying, what is the use of these eyes? Because now the object of our vision, akshanvantam phalamitam namparam vidama, the object that makes one's vision perfect is leaving. So what is the use of our eyes? And now they thought, now the eyes of the residents of Mathura will reach their perfection. So then Krishna kept on walking. And just perhaps to show that it's not just the sentiment of some ladies attracted by a beautiful boy. So then the Brahmins came the wise Brahmins of Mathura, and they began to make different offerings to Krishna of lamps and auspicious items, and they praised him because they understood that he was actually the Supreme Lord. There, Krishna has so many identities. He was this, when he walked into Mathura especially, he was known as the Supreme Lord by some. He was known as Yadav Kumara, the son of the Yadu dynasty, the son of Vasudev by some. They were known as Krishna, but they knew who he was. So the Brahmins worshipped him as the Supreme Lord. And then Krishna kept on walking and met a rajak, met a washer and dyer of clothes. And Krishna very, very sweetly said, please give me some of these clothes, because Krishna was in, he wasn't dressed for the big event of tomorrow that would happen the next day, the wrestling match where he would fight with Chanura and Mastika. But he was dressed just in simple village clothes. So he wanted to look very, very, very special and fancy. And he told the washerman, he spoke sweetly to the washerman, and he told him that if you please give me just the two of us, just for myself and Balaram, even though there were many coward boys with him, if you just give us these some clothes, even though they're the kings, then you will get the greatest benefit. You will get the greatest benefit. And practically that's true. There's that verse, Komaramachire Pragyo Daman Bhagavataniha Dolabam Manusha Janma Tarapadruva Martadam. If with something temporary, because the things of this world, and as we get older, it's, at least I get older, it's so clear that the things that I thought were me, the identities that I thought were me, when I was young, I could run and run and run and run practically for hours and hours and hours. I wouldn't get tired. And I was proud of that. I thought that was me. Then there was a time when I had hair on my head. I was never so proud of that. But anyway, that's another story. Some of my friends had blondish hair, and some of them had very curly, there was straight hair that was very stylish. And had the wrong kind. So all the things that I thought were me, but at least I had hair. So all the things that I thought were me, all those different upadis or identities, impositions, overlays on who I actually am, one by one as we get older. I'm the one who had teeth. I'm the one who had a nice smile. I could see. I could hear. I had some strength. I could do this. I could do that. One by one, we lose them as we get older. One by one, and that is a frustration, or the frustration, as we get older. And then, when we see people who still have those qualities, the young people, then there's a tendency to get envious. And then as we say, oh, I remember when I could run, or I could lift, or I was this, and we think like that, only if I could run again. And then we're planting desires for our next seeds, for our next birth, right in our heart. So really, we should only have one lamentation in life. For all the things that we saw someone had more of than us, or was better at than us, and we wished that only if I was like that, and only if I had that, and I could do that, if I could sing and play harmonium. I still can't figure out how Vyas can just sit there and just goes in his ear and it comes out his fingers. How does that happen? I can't figure it out. It doesn't happen to me. Only if I could play the harmonium, only if I knew Sanskrit, only if this. instead of having these kind of lamentations, which are indirect, they are means, ways to get something else, just have one lamentation, and that one is legitimate, it is proper. If only I had love for Krishna. If only I had love for Krishna. Have love for so many things in this world. I'm attached and attracted to so many things, but I don't have love for Krishna. To Daiva Midrisam, unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction for Krishna's holy names. There's so much time during the day, and I find so many ways to waste it, but I don't have time to chant or to speak of chant with some devotion or love. So in any case, this Krishna had told this washerman that if you give me what I want, then I will reward you. He didn't say what would happen if you don't give me what I want, which, but it wasn't just because he, anyway, Krishna killed him. We've been speaking the last few days trying to understand Krishna's wonderful action of killing him, of the washerman. But he killed him. And so tarappadruva martidam, that which is temporarily passing through our hands, so to speak, and we have, if we can use the temporary to gain the eternal, then we are extremely fortunate and extremely intelligent, and that is the purpose of life. Then we've actually used our life properly. If we use the temporary, that which is going to be taken from us anyway, stolen from us by time, if we can use that, that we're going to use what you're going to lose. Now that sounds like a t-shirt. If we can use what we're going to lose anyway and use that to gain the greatest thing, the jewel of existence, our relationship with Krishna, how fortunate we are. So the washerman wasn't so fortunate. He was killed, but he was fortunate because Krishna was the one who separated him from his head or from his body. It depends on how you look at it, where he actually was. And then Krishna went on further. And then there was a weaver or a tailor in Krishna, and that tailor was a devotee, immediately served Krishna, and he made very nice ornaments for Krishna so that he would appear very opulently in the wrestling arena. And then Krishna went to the third Sudama, and that Sudama gave Krishna the most wonderful, fragrant, long garlands in Balaram. But he didn't just make garlands for him. He gave them to Krishna with such devotion. He was thinking that this is the perfection of who I am. I'm a garland maker. Let me do this for Krishna. Let me give who I am to Krishna. I'm a garland maker. Krishna, please take these Balaram. Please take these garlands. And Krishna was so happy, not as much with the garlands, although the result of Sudama's devotion was wonderful, and Krishna was pleased with that. But he was pleased with the devotion that he had offered the garlands with, and he said to Sudama, "What do you want? I'll give you whatever you want. Just imagine if Krishna said that to you." Actually, when I first started chanting, the very kind devotee who taught me how to introduce me to Srila Prabhupada and taught me how to chant in a serious, proper way, because I had been chanting a little before that. But Rupanuga Prabhu, he for some reason, he used to tell us in the very, very early days, he said, "One day," where is Sundari? Sifa. One day, he used to say, if you keep chanting, one day Krishna is going to come to you and show himself to you and say, I am like this. Now, I don't know why he always would, when he would say this, he would always go, I am like this. So, and then he said, and after Krishna says that here he shows himself, then he will say, what do you want from me? So Rupanuga Prabhu used to tell us, when he says, what do you want from me? Don't tell him anything. He used to say it such a sweet and innocent way. You say, no. I'm not a merchant. I have not been serving you to get anything from you. Just please let me serve you. In the beginning, he used to tell us that. Very, very sweet and innocent and very cute also. So, Sudama asked for, if I remember correctly, he asked for three things. He said, I want devotion that's everlasting to you, O Lord. And I want friendship with the devotees. And please bless me with a compassionate heart for those who are in a lower position and don't have what I have. So those three things had a deal upward with the Supreme Lord, friendship with the devotees, and compassion for those who have less than we have. And very, very, very interestingly, and this I discovered last year, in the first canto, is there a first canto of the Bhagavatam nearby? One would hope so. In the 19th chapter of the first canto.
What chapter?
The 19th chapter of the first canto. When Maharaj Prakrit is cursed to die, he's the king, he had everything. And suddenly, and when you have so much, it describes in the Bhagavatam that when you have something that whatever gives us pleasure, we become attached to. So he had the source of so much pleasure. He had power, everything. He had wealth. He was the prime person in the kingdom. But then he gave it up immediately because he found out that it was soon time for him to leave this world. And he gave up his kingdom, and he went down. He went to the bank of the Jamuna or the Ganga, and he sat there. He installed his son as the king, and he sat down on the bank of the river, and he had a question. And the question was that, what should I do? This is the last 7 days of my life. I've been cursed and I will die. He's in the same situation we're in the same situation. So he had that question, what should I do during my remaining time? And when the great sages of the world heard that the king, this powerful soul, this great devotee, had given up his kingdom and he was sitting on the bank of the river waiting for his death to come, they all came around him. And how he greeted them is quite interesting. Oops. Oh, I can't find it. They all had decided to stay there with him. Oh yes, he says. He says to the Brahmanas who had all gathered there. He said, "Puna cha bayad Bhagavat yanante." I offer my obeisances. Puna means again. I offer my obeisances again to all you Brahmanas. And then he prayed to them for some benedictions. I pray that if I should again take my birth in the material world, I will have complete attachment to the unlimited Lord Krishna, Bhagavate Anante. I will have attachment to Lord Krishna. What was the first thing that Sudama had prayed for? Attachment to Krishna. And I will have association with devotees. What was the second thing that Sudama prayed for? Association with the friendship with devotees. Of course, we all know that association with devotees means friendship with all the devotees. I mean, we all have different conditioning, yes. This is the most difficult thing in one sense. But it's so important to keep friendly, respectful relationships amongst the devotees. One time, one devotee wrote Prabhupada, he was he was in ISKCON, but a little bit antagonistic to the devotees. So he wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, "In my temple, where I'm in charge, the devotees aren't fighting." So in a subtle way, he was criticizing that in the other temples, they fight. But in my temple, they don't fight. And Prabhupada wrote back, "That is utopian. It will never happen." But somehow or another, in this mixture of all of us sort of thrown together, if we can keep respectful dealings and be able to associate with devotees. So he asked for, that was the second thing, friendship or association with his devotees. And last, friendly relations with all living beings. So similar to what Sudama asked for. So similar. What nice desires to have. So in any case, Krishna took the wonderful garlands. He had now very nice clothes. Because of the mercy of the kindness of the washerman and the weaver. And then he left. And then he continues on his way. And that's, even though it's getting close to the time to end, that's where we'll begin. There. This chapter also, this next chapter, the 42nd chapter, is so exciting. And so is the 43rd and the 44th and the 45th and on and on and on. It's like just because it all has to do with Krishna, and he does everything in such a wonderful way. Everything he does is wonderful. We saw that we heard that when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami speaks about Lord Chaitanya, he says, "I'm only writing it in brief, but in fact a book could be written, an unlimitedly big book can be written about every day of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, because everything was so wonderful." And I personally saw that with Prabhupada too. The way he did things, the subtleties, the grace, was all so wonderful that you could really write a book about one day of how Prabhupada, from getting up early in the morning or late at night, practically speaking, till everything was so well done, aristocratic, gentle, spiritual, fully conscious, fully clear, in consciousness and so focused on Krishna. So this continues. So Sukadeva Goswami is speaking. As he walked down the king's road, Krishna and the cowherd boys and Lord Balaram, Lord Madhava then saw a young hunchback woman with an attractive face who carried a tray of fragrant ointments as she walked along. The bestower of the ecstasy of love, Krishna, he smiled and he began to speak to her. So she was carrying, oh, he'll ask you that, but she was carrying a tray full of fragrances, and these fragrances were meant for Kamsa's pleasure. So there's some explanation by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that this Trivakra, because she was bent, and her name was Kuja, famous as a hunchback. And she was actually one of the energies of Krishna. Her position is quite extraordinary. So Krishna wanted to tease her a bit. He wanted to joke with her. So Krishna said, because she was a hunchback, so Krishna said, "Who are you, O beautiful thighed one?" "Ah, ointment." And he looked at the fragrances that he had, the sandalwood, she had this and that. "Who is it for, my dear lady? Please tell us truthfully. Give us both, myself and Balaram, some of your finest ointment, and you will soon gain a great boon." So he was teasing her on one level, and one would think, when if you see a person who's having a physical problem, it's not very nice to tease them about their physical problem and make fun of them. But actually, Krishna was soon going to completely change her and straighten out her problem. He was the original chiropractor in that sense. And then, so Kubja replied, Trivakra replied, everyone was looking at Krishna. He was so beautiful, and he chose to talk to her. So she was completely captivated by him. Krishna is so fragrant. He's wearing these clothes. He has this garment. He's so beautiful. He's effulgent. He's powerful. And so, so beautiful. Unlimitedly beautiful, as we mentioned. How beautiful is unlimitedly beautiful? "So, O handsome one, I am a servant of King Kamsa." "Who highly regards me," he has much regard for me, "because of the ointments that I make. My name is Trivakra," means curved in three places. "Who else but you too deserve my ointments?" When she saw Krishna, even though the ointments were meant for Kamsa, and they were so fine and delicate, she thought, who was this really meant for? This is really meant for you, Krishna. "So you too deserve my ointments, which the Lord of the Bhojas, Kamsa, likes so much." Her mind became overwhelmed by Krishna's beauty, his charm, his sweetness, his smiles, his words and his glances, the way Krishna moves his eyes from one to the next, he just charms everyone. She was completely charmed, and Trivakra gave both Krishna and Balaram generous amounts of ointment. So I've heard a description of by His Holiness Radha Govinda Maharaj, after having he studied the commentaries very carefully, and he describes what Sri Vakra did, how she did it. First, she put because Balaram was whitest complexion, she put darkest ointments on him, and Krishna, she put whitest sandalwood type of ointments on him, and then she began to decorate his face. And I remember him saying when I heard this, that just like if you decorate the deities, if you're putting what we call gopi dots on the deities, on Samasund or Srimati Radharani or Madhava, you take your finger just to steady your hand so every dot is perfect. You take your finger and put it on the cheek over here, and then you have the little stick, and then you very, very, very carefully just put different colors and golden colors and bluish colors and reddish colors. And in this way, she decorated Krishna so carefully. Because again, Krishna, the most artful of all dancers, the most, he likes looking, appearing very dramatically and wonderfully. So now he had wonderful clothes, and now he had a wonderful garland, and now he was being decorated perfectly, and he was getting ready for the main event that he had come to Mathura for. So she decorated him so carefully, out of again attraction, deep attraction. So our acharyas, Srila Rupa Goswami describes that her attraction is actually mixed. It is not pure like the Braja Gopikas and all the resonance of Vrindavan, but because we're talking about this type of attraction, because there was some selfish desire in there. She was interested in Krishna for her pleasure. While the residents of Vrindavan, they are Krishnendriya Priti. We've been saying that verse. And because they are simply interested in Krishna's pleasure. And this is, we are taught this from the very beginning of our devotional service, that this is the process, Anya Vilasita Sanyam Jnanakamara Navita. What's the rest of the verse? Anukulena Krishna Anusilanam Bhakti. This is what bhakti actually is. It is pure. It is meant for Krishna's pleasure. And it is this kind of bhakti. Kriti sadhya bhavetsa sadhanadabhi nitya sadasya bhavasa prakattam riti sadhyata. It is this kind of bhakti. Pure bhakti, not mixed with something for Krishna, but I need some percentage for me, and at least 5% or 10%. Because this is the tendency, if I'm doing something, I want at least something out of it. But the kind of bhakti that is jnana karma anavrita, that is devoid, that has no desires for karma or jnana, but is just meant for Krishna's pleasure, this kind of bhakti is the bhakti that will bring prema, love for Krishna in time. So this is a very pure standard, and it is wonderful. And Krishna is so wonderful that he becomes captured by this. That my devotees have, they're doing so much just for me, and they don't want anything. They just want my pleasure. How can I repay them? Like with the pastime of Sudama Brahmana. That Sudama Brahmana begged something for Krishna. He gave Krishna more than what he had. And Krishna felt himself embarrassed, thinking there's nothing more than what I have. Because everything is mine. So how can I, in front of Sudama, give him something even? Because he's given, I have to reciprocate equally. So Krishna actually becomes captured by the devotion of the devotees. So this is Krishna. This is Krishna. Very grateful, Supreme Lord. Sakrideva papanastam tava yachisayachase tava asmi. If one one time says Krishna, surrenders to Krishna, saying, Krishna, I am yours. One time, sakrid eva papanastam tava smriti chayasite sarvada tasmai sarvada abhayam tasmai dadam yatad vritam mama. I will give that person, for that one time calling out to me with a full heart and surrendering, I am yours. Basically, I will give myself to him. So Kubja, see, on the royal road, which means the royal road means Kamsa's road at this point, public, and she was carrying things meant for the king. So very boldly on the public road, she said, "You are the proper person to give this to," because she was so overwhelmed by Krishna. So Srivakra gave both Krishna and Balaram generous amounts of ointment. "Please take it," it says in the Vishnu Purana. And then anointed with these most excellent cosmetics, which adorned them with colors that contrasted with their complexions, the two lords appeared very beautiful. Lord Krishna was pleased with Trivakra. So he decided to straighten that hunchback girl with the lovely face, just to demonstrate the results of seeing him. So Krishna pressed down on her toes with both his feet, and Lord Achyuta placed one upward pointing finger of each hand under her chin, and with his feet on her toes, he gave her an adjustment and straightened her body. Simply by Lord Mukunda's touch. What does Mukunda mean? The giver of liberation. And his face is like a kunda flower, which means muk. His face is like a jasmine flower, expanding very, very beautifully. So by Lord Mukunda's touch, Trivakra was suddenly transformed into an exquisitely beautiful woman, with straight, even proportioned limbs. Now that she was beautiful, and her, now endowed with beauty, character, and generosity, Trivakra began to feel very strong desires to be with Krishna, Keshava. And she grabbed the top part of his cloth, like this, and this is on the public road, with Balaram right there and all the cowherd boys there. So she smiled and held on to his upper cloth and addressed him as follows. "Oh, hero, please come to my house." See, that's where everywhere Krishna goes. Everyone says, "Please come to my house. I cannot bear to leave you here. Oh, best of males, please take pity on me, since you have agitated my mind." There's a little commentary in here by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he says, and saying that Krishna replies, "Is it for the purpose of dining that you invited me to your house?" And Trivakra says, "I simply cannot leave you here." And Krishna says, "But people here on the king's road will misunderstand what you're saying and they'll laugh. Therefore, please don't speak like this." And Trivakra says, "I cannot help it. You made the mistake of touching me, so it is not my fault." So then Thus entreated, spoken to by the woman, Lord Krishna first glanced at the face of Balaram, because especially in a cultured place, the older brother is like a parent. So there is no proper mixing of young girls and young boys in front of the elder brother or the parent. So Krishna first looked at Balaram's face, who was watching everything, and then at the faces of the cowherd boys, and then he laughed, and he said to her as follows, "O lady with the beautiful eyebrows, as soon as I fulfill my purpose, I will certainly visit your house." He just spoke in a very strong, in a very amusing way, laughing. He replied to her laughing so that he wouldn't actually get into trouble with them. And then he began to speak in a very general way. I certainly will visit your house where men can relieve their anxiety. Indeed, you are the best refuge for us homeless travelers, meaning all of us saying, "We'll all come to your house, don't worry." Therefore, he escaped. He was speaking very, very cleverly. He said, "I will come because you are the refuge for all of us, so we'll all." So that's why he said he would come, and he covered it immediately. That's how Krishna does things. He's very, very, very clever. So he left her immediately with these sweet words. So within her heart, within the heart of Akura, Krishna had planted this desire that I will come and see you. He had said, "I will come and see both of you." So from this moment on, Akura and this Trivakra, they were just thinking, "When will I see Krishna? When 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 will I see Krishna?" Like Narada Muni, always chanting and thinking, "When will I see Krishna?" Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "When will I be qualified to see Krishna? I have no love for Krishna. When will I see Krishna?" When their desires were so strong. When will I see Krishna? When will I see Krishna? When will I see Krishna? When will I be with all attractive Krishna? When will I be able to serve Krishna? So he left her on the road, and the merchants along the way then worshipped Krishna and his elder brother by presenting them with various respectful offerings, including pan, garlands, and fragrant substances. So Krishna, everywhere he went, everyone was offering him, making offerings to him. They were captivated by him. The sight of Krishna aroused Cupid in the hearts of the city women. Thus agitated, they forgot themselves. Their clothes, braids, and bangles became disheveled, and they stood still like paintings, figures in a painting. So this is Krishna. He's all attractive. Now there's more to this pastime to the end. Let's see if we can get to the end. Probably not. But then Krishna asked the local people where the arena was where the sacrifice was being performed, the bull sacrifice. So he went there and he saw the amazing bull, Dhanurjagya. The sacrifice was being performed. It was a bull. And this was the bull. Does anyone remember? I mentioned it from the first class. It was Lord Shiva's bow that was given to from Vishnu to Shiva, from Shiva to Parsaram, and Parsaram gave it to Kamsa. And the Garga Samhita describes how when Kamsa was gathering his forces, his allies, he He went to the mountain where Parsaram was staying. He specifically went there and he lifted the mountain. He was so powerful and threw it down and lifted it and threw it down and lifted and threw it down. He was showing his strength. And Parsaram was there. And he came out and he looked at Kamsa. And he said, "You are like a mosquito, and I will crush you." Because he said that you Kshatriyas are so proud of your strength, I will crush you. And Kamsa said, "I am not a Kshatriya." And he explained that he was the son, not of actually of Ugrasena, but of a Rakshasa, an Asura, who had taken the form of Ugrasena. So he said, "Actually, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm actually a Rakshasa." And that actually pacified Parsaram. And he told Kamsa, Parsaram told Kamsa, "That bow, I will give it to you if you can string it. But if you fail to string it, it will kill you. It will take all your strength." So Kamsa actually strung the bow, and Parsaram gave it to him. And Parsaram told him that when it comes to the time that someone breaks that bow, the person who breaks it will be the cause of your death. So therefore, we won't be able to get to it. We'll end now. But it's such a wonderful how Krishna enters into the arena and what he does to the bow. And he actually, when he goes to string it, he breaks it. And Kamsa hears that, the cracking of the bow, and the sound of the bow cracking cracks his heart. And step by step, he's giving Kamsa the chance to release Devaki and Vasudeva from prison. And immediately, if Kamsa came out and said, "Release Devaki and Vasudeva," and said, "Krishna, excuse me for all my mistakes. I've killed your brothers. I've been very demonic, and please forgive me." Krishna would have immediately forgiven him. But he was a demon through and through, and to the very moment he was inimical, the moment of his death, he was inimical with Krishna. But from that moment, when he heard the cracking of the bow, from that moment, no other thought came to his mind other than of Krishna. So the pastime continues, but we won't continue right now. But what we will do is we'll chant just for a few more minutes. That's all right. But first, are there any questions? Yes. Any simple questions?
Yes. The books is divided into different chapters. So the entrance to Mathura is continuing because it's now different groups. And why there's that division in particular there between the chapter 41 and 42? Is there some logic?
Sure. Any other questions? You were right, that one was a simple one. You asked me, was there any logic? Huh? Yes.
There are devotees in the Torah like the Dam and the Kvora. And how could they tolerate to serve Kamsa?
Well, Akura, how he tolerated serving Kamsa, how he stayed there, he was the only. Practically speaking, one of the only members of the Yadu dynasty who stayed. But he stayed for several reasons. The first is he knew that Krishna would come and kill him, kill Kamsa. And he wanted to be there to see Krishna kill Kamsa. So sometimes when we have a very important mission to do, we tolerate things that we normally wouldn't tolerate. And he was the one, he was staying there, and he was acting as, because he stayed, Kamsa thought so highly of him and considered him so loyal that he even told Akura that you go and he gave him the mission. So he was always hoping to see Krishna. And then he was amazed that the opportunity to see Krishna came from, of all people, it was by Kamsa's order. So he was thinking how amazing fate is, that by the order of Kamsa, of all people, I'm getting the greatest fortune of seeing Krishna. So quite wonderful. And Sudama, he was just a flower. He wasn't a servant of Kamsa particularly. He didn't associate with Kamsa. Kamsa was the king. He was just living there. But Akura was actually associating with him. And how astounding was the trust that Akura had built up with Kamsa. That Kamsa even told him that you bring, and it was such an elaborate plan too, you bring Krishna here, and my plan is to have him killed. So he had so much trust in him that he told him his plan. And Akura replied, we will see what happens, basically. Because ultimately we make our plans, but it's the Supreme Lord. And he was indirectly saying, yes, 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 but he was thinking that Krishna's going to come and kill you, and I will see that. It's quite wonderful that most of that occurs in the 36th chapter of the 10th canto. It's quite exciting, actually, how what happens right after Narada Muni tells Kamsa that Krishna is actually the son of Vasudev. It's quite wonderful how Kamsa reacts. Is that okay? Any last question? Kalindi, do you have a question? No? Are you tired? We have a very short period of time, okay?
Thank you.
Narayana Sesi Bhakti Vinanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavindi Ki His confound of charge of Sri Prabhupada Ki Principle Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adwaita Garadha Sri Vasari Goa Bhakti Vindi Ki Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gogopina Saima Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govindan Ki Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Sri Navadipa Dham Ki Ganga Mahi ki jai, Jamuna Mahi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vinda ki jai. All glorious here, some of the devotees. All glorious here, some of the devotees. All glorious here, some of the devotees. All glorious to CC Guru Nanak Vidai Gaur Primalande. Good night. Thank you.